Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome to BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris, I'm the believer.
I'm Cody, I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we are an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network. And this here is a full live
special
edition episode of BSB,
and we're usually a podcast, and so I'm not used to being on video. So
if you see us going like this, or looking at each other, that is why.
I was looking at my screen and I'm like, oh, there's a camera. Hi.
Yeah, we've only ever in the 5 years that we've been doing this only done one other live stream, so that's why it's a little
live
different.
Video stream.
Yeah
because we've done lots of audio stuff, but
live video.
So anyway, if you're new to the podcast, then let me tell you about us. All the people who are watching that are new and haven't heard about us, welcome. We're so glad that you're here.
Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah, start with a shout out.
Thanking Arizona Theater Matters for allowing us to do this. We are part of their 3-day festival, May 19th through the 22nd, which if you're watching it now, you're watching it during that time. But it is a pay what you can festival. Many artists are performing for the weekend for Arizona Theater Matters. So if you have anything you want to donate to them, anything like that, see what they're doing in the future, go to arizonatheatermatters.org.
Yeah, Chris memorized all that, and he's not reading it from the screen right now. So now to the podcast. So we are BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast, and what we do is we loved the unexplained. Chris is more of a spiritual person / believer, whereas I'm more the skeptic. So we'll pick a paranormal topic, come at you with information and stories and just a lot of fun stuff, and then Chris talks about why people believe, and then I debunk the crap out of it. Are we allowed to cuss in this?
Yeah. And I will mention something here since this will be a little bit longer than our normal episodes. So we have plenty of time to talk about all this stuff.
Yeah.
But that being said, I also want to thank Jean Marie Bishop. She is the one that approached us to do this and has been an avid fan of ours for a little bit now, and she loves everything we do, so she invited us to do this, and it's a huge opportunity, and we are very grateful for you as well, Jean Marie. So thank you.
So grateful. I thought you said a rabid fan at first. And I was like, neat. The first one. Oh my gosh. So that's the basics. That's us. Should we go ahead and tell them now where people can find us instead of at the end in case they just want to know?
Yeah, sure. So if you want to find us, you can find us on our website at bspodphx.com. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at bspodphx. Yep. If you have any personal stories about the paranormal or anything weird that you may want us to discuss on the podcast, you can reach us through email at bspodphx@gmail.com.
Yeah, and for all those who don't know, especially if you have any people out of town, that's bspodphx for Phoenix.
Yeah.
And so that way you can spell it correctly and you're not looking for penis.
What?
BS pod penis. There's a treat there. Okay.
As Cody is saying, just a little bit about us, since a lot of you may be new to us, especially those watching us live. Again, I'm a kind of spiritual believer person.
Yeah.
He is a former Catholic or Reformed Catholic.
Yeah, I was supposed to be the priest of the family, like super religious. And then just one day I started questioning things and kind of never looked back. Yeah, because here's the thing. I've told Chris, you should question. Yes. Yeah. I want to believe, but I'm also a proof person. And so I have a problem with faith just for the sake of faith.
Yeah.
But give me some proof. Please make me a believer.
So that's us in a nutshell. We just love weird shit and always talk about weird shit and lots of double entendres, which will go along with one of my stories today. You'll know why. So
interesting.
Yeah. With that, maybe our setup here gives a little bit of a clue to what we're talking about.
Damn it, I was going to be creepy whenever we started. Like, what? And I completely forgot.
Well, now you can explain what the setup is all about.
Damn it, Chris. So doesn't it look like we're about to conjure some spirits here?
Yeah.
We've actually talked about Ouija boards and some other things, but we've never actually formally talked about seances.
Yeah.
And so we are coming at you with information and stories about seances. My first story, oh man, it's the reason I do this. I love it.
You're going to laugh your ass off at my second story. It's one of those ones that you're just going to find ridiculous and funny.
Good. Oh, I love ridiculous and funny.
And my first one was very interesting to me. So anyways, we'll get to those as we get to them.
Mm-hmm.
So seances. So we'll kind of our format, just so you know, we just did the topic. Then we'll go into our drinks, which we always do a theme drink with the episode. And then we'll see, or not, or justify it in some half-assed random way.
Horrible rationalization.
And then we'll go into our history of the topic. Then we'll each do 2 to 3 stories each. Then after all of that, we'll go into believer skeptic, as he'll tell why he's debunking the topic, and I'll tell why I or other people believe. And then we'll end you off with a little of.
Then we'll finish you off
with a little of a creep of the week, which is a relevant current event or story that relates to the topic.
Yeah, because we got an hour and a half.
Yeah, and we will definitely fill it.
Wink. Yeah, we usually run our 48 minutes for some reason is our kind of aimed for sweet spot. So we're basically doing twice.
Yeah.
Like a double.
But
so if y'all get bored halfway through, then just be like, oh, well, this is a normal length of an episode, which is perfect. And then you can go listen to that.
Well, hopefully you don't get bored halfway through the episode.
Too late.
Whatever.
So should we do our drinks?
Yeah. Okay. Because also, as you know, we're in Arizona. In order to record, we have to turn off all the AC and all that. So it's fucking hot in here, especially with these candles and all that good stuff. Yeah. So if you see us glistening, that is why.
Yeah. Good word.
Yeah.
So, okay. So theme drinks.
I'll let you go first. I went first for last episode.
I don't want
episode.
To, but I will. Okay. So I have kind of a reputation of just walking into Circle K at the last minute and rationalizing Bud Light or Roscato.
And that's not an understatement.
Yeah. It's kind of my thing. And then Chris will have a garden with muddled homemade rosemary in his drink. But this is the worst one.
How do you
one.
Home make rosemary?
Well, you grow it.
It's not making it.
You get flour because it's a flower. Oh, okay. Never mind.
It's
I'm
a plant.
Up. Okay.
It's a shrub.
So it is a shrub. Well, I got for this episode, it is a vodka soda, but it is a Sunsplash. Because the topic of my first story, her name is Marion Sun. And I just made that up. It's not true.
Oh.
I have no rationale for this drink other than I saw this Sunsplash vodka soda.
It looks good.
Yeah.
And it's cherry limeade.
And it's cherry lime. So I was like, well, let me try this. This sounds really good. So that's why I got it.
Well, for mine, yes, as Cody says, I do make my own drinks. And
hold up the glass.
I also, it's non-alcoholic because I do not drink alcohol anymore. That being said, in one of my stories, I speak about astrology. So I looked up an article today about drinks, summer drinks that are like about your sign or that are influenced by your sign.
Oh, that's
it's probably
really
a bunch
cool.
of bullshit, but this is what it says.
Okay.
I made a non-alcoholic version of, it's called a swamp something or other.
Swass. That's what I meant.
It looks like it's actually really kind of seance colored.
Yeah. It's a blue lagoon, not a swamp. It's called the Blue Lagoon.
Okay.
It's the non-alcoholic in my rendition because I couldn't find non-alcoholic blue carousel. So anyways, it says here, Pisces is the zodiac's dreamer, belonging to the water element. This sign is all about feelings. The emblematic fish is ruled by the Neptune, named after the Roman god of the sea, and is considered the magician of the universe, representing imagination, creativity, and magical world. This drink is the perfect tribute to our water-loving friends. So it's a bright blue blue lagoon.
Ah.
The way I made it is I put in the blue Hawaiian punch. lemon juice, orange bitters, and soda.
Okay, I was wondering what you did for Blue Curacao.
Yeah.
It looks really good. You like hit yourself in the face with it.
It's a little bitter, but I like it.
It's good?
Yeah.
Yay. Well, this vodka soda stuff is kind of ass.
I want to
it's
taste it.
Swass. How do you say it? Swass.
That is gross.
Yeah, it's not.
That's like, that is swamp water.
If anyone works for the Sunsplash company.
Sorry.
Yeah. Actually, now that I've had four sips and worried that someone works for the company, it's pretty good now. All right. I don't know where that came from. So now, with our drinks out of the way, Chris, you're going to give us some history on the topic?
Yeah. There's so much to seances and the history behind them. So, per usual, I will give you some highlights about the practice and spiritualism and all that stuff involved.
Yeah.
So, at its most simple, but not really that simple, a seance is the practice of communicating with the deceased, usually with the assistance of a medium. The medium themselves are the ones who make contact with the spirit and either speaks on the spirit's behalf or will use the spirit will use the medium as a conduit and speak to the living using their physical body. In a session, it is believed that communication has been made when a disembodied voice can be heard. It speaks through a medium or some kind of apparition appears. Other things can happen during a session, such as music or noises heard that are not in the room. Objects can appear to move on their own, and so on and so on and so on. There's all that good paranormal stuff that you all know about. The word seance itself is a French word that means session.
Wait, that's it?
Literally means session.
How underwhelming is that?
Well, so to use the word seance in French, it doesn't just apply to this practice we are speaking about, but it's just a general term for session.
So if they happen to say a seance in French, that could mean just they're having
any
a meeting.
Any session, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
but
that's cool.
In the English-speaking world, I don't know why, but this world came to be associated with these specific paranormal sessions rather than the general one.
But you're not going to go into a work seance.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Aside from mediums receiving messages and translating them from the dead, they can also use other tools designed specifically for communicating with the dead, such as spirit boards, which we did do a Ouija episode, so check that out if you want more information. Trumpets, not the musical ones. It's just basically like a horn where noise can come through.
But a trumpet?
That's what they called it, but it's just like a horn.
The ear where you listen?
Yeah, where you can hear the voices through that. Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Tables for knocking and whatnot, you know, and then also, and cabinets, to name a few, also for knocking.
You're just naming like random things in your kitchen. It's like a session.
A tortilla press.
Yeah. Shelves.
Communicating with spirits like this goes back many, many years, although probably known by different names, but nonetheless the same practice. We just have to look to the book of Samuel in the Bible, where Saul consults a medium in order to contact his long deceased teacher, Samuel, to find an early example of seances.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. You tend to pull out examples of lots of our paranormal episodes from the Bible.
That you don't know.
Which I don't know, being a Catholic, but it's interesting that there's so much paranormal in there.
I'm sure you've
there.
Heard of the Witch of Endor. That's where that story is. So look up the Witch of Endor.
All I can think of are Ewoks.
No, the Witch of Endor is in the Bible.
Okay.
Okay. The history as to where seances started and came from is rather muddy, to say the least. But we know that this practice had a kind of renaissance during the late 1800s, early 1900s, due to a little known movement known as spiritualism.
Yeah, Chris loves this one.
I did talk a little about spiritualism and the Fox sisters in our Ouija board episode. So again, if some of this sounds a little familiar.
Fox.
Yeah, not the Fox sisters. Yes. Fox. As in the animal.
Yes.
So if it sounds a little familiar, that is why. According to some cynical and opportunistic individuals, saw a business opportunity giving birth to this movement. You see, not unlike a couple of years ago with COVID in the U.S., an influenza pandemic hit between 1918 and 1920, which, of course, caused a lot of death and brought about a lot of unanswered questions.
With the Spanish flu epidemic in the 1900s brought about the spiritualism?
Kind of. People were seeking answers, and this just helped to tap into that.
Interesting. Wow.
In addition to that, World War I was ending, which, as we know, also caused a lot of death. So people were looking for answers, and swindlers were looking to respond. You know, spiritualism for many believers promised a window into the afterlife, and as a result, caused quite the resurgence, not just in the U.S., but across the world. The resurgence of the movement was greatly supported by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Oh, Sherlock Holmes?
Yep, creator of Sherlock Holmes, among other characters, and Sir Oliver Lodge.
Mamma Mia?
A respected physicist.
Oh, okay.
I just did that to see if you would know.
No idea.
I didn't either. Both of these men not only had a longtime interest in the supernatural, but had both also had lost their sons to war.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Lodge had written a book that detailed the numerous attempts he had made to contact his son through mediumship. After a few years of indulging in the practice, Lodge was quoted as saying, quote, "I have talked to a good many lads killed in the war. They have not gone out of existence. They tell me it's pretty much over there as it is on this side," unquote. Now, as for Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, after a seance in 1919, he alleged to have heard from his son, prompting him to call the moment, quote, "the supreme moment of my spiritual experience."
Unquote. So he believed in it.
Yeah.
Even though he has Sherlock Holmes debunking everything.
And he also talks about spiritualism in one of his Sherlock Holmes books. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually, until right now, thought that Sherlock Holmes was written in like the early 1700s.
Nope.
And apparently I was very wrong.
Yeah, he's pretty within the last 100 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So 2 years after this experience, Conan Doyle recalled his experience with a reporter saying, quote, "I have spoken many times with my son. You see, a so-called dead man goes to a happier place. There is no crime, no sordidness, and it is man many times happier," unquote.
Wow.
These were not the only famous people who had belief in seances and mediums. Some may be surprised to know that some sessions took place in the White House.
Huh.
After the death of her son, Mary Todd Lincoln organized seances in the White House, which were attended by President Abraham Lincoln, as well as other well-known members of society. Many other prestigious members of society have also consulted mediums and conducted seances, such as Alexander Graham Bell, for example, and I will speak of one later tonight. During the peak of seance practices, many mediums became almost household names, you know. Aside from the Fox sisters, we also had the Davenport brothers, and someone Cody has spoken about in a previous episode, Edgar Casey.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember talking about him at all.
Well, as seances started to reach their peak or their end here in America, along with that came a lot of backlash. Most famous of these stories is that of magician and illusionist Harry Houdini, who made it his life's work to debunk seances and spiritualism in general, saying that a spiritualist's tricks could easily be created by someone like himself, a magician and illusionist. Despite his disbelief, Houdini and his wife had made an agreement that whoever died first, they would try to contact the other person from the other side with a pre-decided message.
Oh, cool.
Houdini's wife believed that she would contact her husband, considering his success as a magician and escape artist, so she continuously held these seances.
Oh, she continuously did after his death.
Yeah.
So she kept trying to pass this message to him.
Yeah, okay. Or have him say the message that he said he was going to tell her.
Oh, tell her. Yeah, okay.
But that never happened. And the final Houdini seance, as it was titled, was held on Halloween night, 1936, 10 years after his death.
Ah.
So, of course, Houdini was just one of the many known debunkers of spiritualism and seances. That being said, there are still many that believe in the practice and will regularly consult with a medium to speak with the other side to this day. For, you know, even in crime scenes and stuff like that. The
police, oh, you're right. Yeah, that's true. It is that big, isn't it?
So, well, there you have some very condensed and mixed information on seances.
Very cool. Okay, question. Do we know what Houdini and his wife's message they were supposed to send was supposed to be?
I think it was in my research, but I didn't write it down. Or I didn't type it out. So.
Huh. I was like, I don't know if that was one of those taken to the grave, literally. Like, they never revealed it because they didn't want to risk, you know, somebody it getting out. And yes, yeah. Yes.
I think they said it. So she probably said it, like, on her deathbed, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So look it up, people.
Lick my clam.
Ew.
And that was her message to Houdini. Anyway, but that was a great history. That was so interesting.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It was a lot of different stuff of spiritualism, seances, but it's all kind of under the same umbrella.
Yeah. And it all came together. It was really neat.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, y'all.
Story.
All right. Y'all ready? Yay. Okay.
Y'all ready for this?
Ready for this? I am going to be talking in my first story, and this story, just, you can listen to this one and ignore my other ones, because this one is so fascinating. It brings together history, the paranormal, conspiracy theories, and all
witchcraft.
This crap, witchcraft, and all this. Yeah. So I'm going to be talking to y'all about Helen Duncan, or Britain's Last Witch. Oh. And she really is. She is Britain's Last Witch.
I was waiting to hear Helen Keller. I'm sure if you talk to a few Brits right now, they would tell you they are witches. So.
Oh, yeah. But you'll see why. You'll see why. There's a reason for this. Okay. So, depending on your standpoint, so, and this could be me and Chris being of two different beliefs.
Yes.
Helen Duncan was either a shameless fraud or a woman blessed with really supernatural powers.
Yes.
I'm going to let y'all decide. I want everyone to let me know what they think. Because this is one.
Which one I think.
I think I know Chris's whenever he hears this. But this is one of those where sometimes it's obvious, like, okay, this is a fraud. But this one's really interesting.
Yeah.
So, the daughter of a cabinet maker, Helen Duncan, was born in 1897 in Callander near Stirling. Like, I don't know where any of these places are, where she grew up in poverty. Her gift of talking to the dead during seances is reputed to have been in evidence from an early age, and by her mid-20s, she was in demand from desperate relatives of the departed. So they wanted this girl.
That's just a funny way of putting it. Like
in demand?
Like everybody wanted her.
Yes. You know,
everybody wanted her to do seances at their parties, and like probably because it was a form of entertainment back then.
Oh, that's true. It was. Oh, and that's one of my other stories. I'm glad you said that.
My next story too.
Oh, do you?
About entertainment, yeah.
Oh, very cool. So, all right, get ready for this. A prominent feature of her sittings was the ability to emit ectoplasm from her orifices during trances. Mm-hmm. And at first it said mouth, but then I read that it was coming out of vaggies and booties. Like, she could just orificize ectoplasm.
In my research, I didn't read about her, but I saw a picture of her, and it's insane. It's all this, like, just out of her mouth, this, like, huge white glob, you know.
Ugh. Yeah, so they said to that end that it was a stringy white substance, and during her seances, it's semen.
Spectral diarrhea.
Oh, I was like, spectral cum.
Gross.
But it was supposed to give birth, and like, you know, never mind, form to spirits and allow them to communicate. So she's like vomiting up spirits. During her seances, the dead were said to appear talking to and even touching members of their family.
I mean, I've vomited in my day, but ghosts was not one of the things that came out of my mouth.
No, exactly. No, just chunks.
Ew.
So, but as word of her seemingly remarkable powers spread, and she began accepting invitations from spiritualist churches, all this stuff, she came under scrutiny. In 1931, she was denounced as a charlatan by the London Psychic Laboratory, which examined her work.
Which I find interesting because I always thought a charlatan was associated with, like, as a religious term, like the church would call you a charlatan rather than like.
Oh, and I thought it was, I actually had this definition where it was like anyone who is phony, like who's pulling the wool over your eyes, is a charlatan.
I just maybe didn't know the definition. I thought it was a religious term.
Like the music man.
No.
He's a charlatan.
Okay.
There's me being stereotypically gay. 2 years later, she was prosecuted at Edinburgh Sheriff Court for being a fraudulent medium and was fined.
Edinburgh?
What did I say? I always do that wrong.
Because it's spelled that way, but it's said Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. But this did not act as a deterrent, though, because her fame grew. Mm-hmm. And now by the outbreak of World War II, Duncan was living in Portsmouth, the home of the Royal Navy.
How old were you then?
God damn it. Oh, you got the first age joke. Damn it. I was 12.
This is an ongoing thing through the last 5 years of our podcast. So
it really is. And you got it. So in 1941, though, this is where the whole real story kicks in. she was approached by the mother of a sailor serving aboard the battleship HMS Barham. The mother, here's the thing, the mother comes to Duncan. She hadn't heard from her son in a while, so she's really worried and she's anxious for word from her son. Yeah. So Duncan held a seance to conjure up any spirits who just might have some news of the man. You know, a friend or relative or someone, right? Like a great-grandfather. Well, during the seance, Duncan ended up conjuring the spirit of the man himself. So that the son was dead.
That's fucked up. Could you imagine going to a psychic or going to a seance just for somebody's help, and then you find out somebody you know is dead?
Yeah, the person
of that.
Because of that, that's how you find out that your son's dead. So, understandably, the mother was distraught when the medium revealed that the young seaman had gone down with the ship. Yeah, there could be so many jokes there. But here's where things get really fucking crazy. It was not until several months later that the HMS Barham was confirmed lost at sea, taking with it more than 800 lives.
So, did they, like, foretell the...
Oh, no. So, this is what's crazy. So, yeah. So, it seems like she's a fortune teller in this instance.
Yeah.
You know, well, how did she talk to him? But it's more crazy in that the ship actually went down right before the seance itself.
How fucking insane is that she feels that or sees that.
And you know? Yes, and nobody knew because the government purposely was withholding the news of the ship sinking because they were trying to keep the public's morale high. So this was during a really difficult time during World War II.
Yeah.
So the government's like, we're not telling anybody about this yet. But somehow she talks to the son who says, I went down with the ship. So is this paranormal or is there an explanation for this? People were super mixed.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
But it didn't matter. Whatever the truth, it's claimed that the medium was regarded by the government as a threat to national security. So they see this, and it's like, we don't give a fuck how she did this. She knows this information. She is a threat. So she was kept under surveillance.
Fuck the patriarchy.
Right. But by early 1944, with the D-Day landings on the horizon, the authorities were terrified that she would spill state secrets again, whether by paranormal or by cheating means. So, seeking a more severe punishment, the government began a 20th century witch hunt. Now, a little bit of backstory here. These purges have been common in history with thousands of men and women executed. The most notable were the Pendle Witches of 1612, where 8 women and 2 men accused of witchcraft were hanged on the moors near Lancaster. And I actually share that story in our witch episode. So go back and listen to that. It's a really interesting episode if you want to hear more about witches. The last person to be executed in Britain for witchcraft was Janet Horne in 1727, who happened to be from Scotland. Mm-hmm. Now, she was accused of doing pacts with the devil, and she was burned at the stake. Now, the last execution for witchcraft in England itself was in 1684, so hundreds of years before.
1684?
Yeah. And Jesus. Now in the 1900s, they're coming after this woman. So a little bit more so you can understand what they're going to go after her for. In 1735, the laws were actually modernized to try to eradicate belief in witches. So basically, people are becoming smarter and they're like, we know that a lot of this is just people being scared. It's not really the case. We don't want you to believe in witches anymore. So instead, it became a crime to claim to have the powers of a witch. So in some ways, that could
make sense. Because they could be considered a fraud or they could give misinformation.
But then what about cases? Fake news? Yes. But what about cases like Duncan who really believe they have a gift? You know, they're supposed to suppress it?
I believe she has a gift.
So, well, and that's the thing. So a lot of people did. So this Witchcraft Act was frequently used to root out ignorance and superstition. But it was under this act that Duncan was prosecuted for pretending to bring about the appearances of the spirits of deceased persons. Now, a defense fund was quickly raised and used to bring witnesses from all over the world to testify that her gifts were genuine. Yeah. So let's talk about this. The way to find her innocent and to get her off the hook is for her to really have a gift.
Yeah, I mean,
how twisted is that?
She would have to have like her jury at a seance or perform a seance in the courtroom or something.
Yes, something like that. Yeah, and it's so wild that it's so reversed where to get off, she's got to be able to actually have a gift.
Yeah, and rather than you would think the quote-unquote lack of gift would get her, off.
Correct. Exactly. But they're just trying to find a way to get rid of this woman.
That's
because
bullshit.
Yeah, because I think that they
because
don't believe
she's a
her.
Woman.
Yes, because she's a, I'm sure the patriarchy was involved. And I'm sure that they did not believe she had a gift to the government. And so they were like, she's not going to be able to prove it, so we can claim that she's in violation of this act and throw her in jail. So the press had a field day with all this, y'all. Well, behind the scenes, Winston Churchill got involved, writing to the Home Secretary to brand the charges obsolete tomfoolery.
Oh, good old Winnie.
And it said that he himself was open to the supernatural and used psychics in his personal life. Let's go a step further. It was claimed that Churchill had actually consulted with Helen Duncan herself. So she's got a fan.
That he was just protecting her.
That's actually a good question.
Yeah.
Maybe. But he's so powerful.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, after a 10-day trial, which provided the nation with a welcome distraction from the grimness of war, she was found guilty and convicted.
Fuck.
She was sentenced to prison, and she was dragged away screaming, "This is all lies. Why are they doing this to me?" So she was thrown in jail. The Witchcraft Act was repealed in 1951, but attempts to clear Duncan's name have always failed. Duncan's granddaughter, Mary, who claims her ancestor was a genuine spiritualist, has said, "The arrest was silly. If they'd spoken to her, she would have stopped giving seances until the war was over."
How hard was it then to just ask, stop doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. They were like they're like, she loved her country. Just asked her to stop. But
yeah.
The government, I guess, they weren't going to take any chances, or they thought she was crazy,
yeah. You
know? So her granddaughter further said, why would she turn around and put her country at risk?
Yeah.
The trial left her a broken woman.
Understandably.
Yep. So after her release from prison, she really believed in herself as a spiritualist, so she continued holding regular seances, and the faith of her believers never wavered. Her final seance was in November of 1956, just a month before her death at age 59. It's claimed by many of Duncan's supporters that her spirit continues to return to this day. So I guess people are having seances with the ultimate seancer?
Medium.
Oh my God. And that is the story of Helen Duncan.
I find it fascinating, interesting. One thing, I just find it interesting because in something that I read, that during this time, during the spiritualist movement, women were kind of in a sense at a higher rank, because they were a lot of the ones that were in charge, so they were like a lot of more powerful.
Okay.
So they were respected in that sense, you know, and that gave way a lot to opening some other doors for women.
Spiritualism did.
Yeah.
That is really interesting, and I guess it also kind of gave, you know, them a career,
absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Huh.
So,
all right.
My story.
Your story. I'm ready.
So as I said, in my history, there are a number of famous people that had belief in seances and spiritualism. My next story is about just one of these people, the famous actor Mae West.
Mae West. I know this name.
She's a starlet from the early life.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Mae was a famous American stage and film actress, among other things, who was active from the age of 14 in 1907 until her death in 1980 at 87.
Oh, wow.
But what many people didn't know is that she was very much into spiritualism and enjoyed hosting seances as entertainment.
Cool.
This would start in 1928 when Mae started to have abdominal pains. She went to the doctor where tests were run, but where the tests were found to be inconclusive.
Mm-hmm.
With no answers, Mae turned to a yogi healer who had been introduced to her by her manager. Well, in the first session, the yogi was able to relieve her of her pain by chanting a Hindu prayer and placing his hands over her stomach. Once he released his hands, May's pain was gone, and the yogi informed Mae that the pain was caused by by other people's envy of her. What?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, I'll get into a little bit sidetrack here, but there's something called empacho that we talk about in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
where it's based, in a sense, abdominal pains, but it's like a twisting of the intestines, in a sense. It's hard to explain, but once, they use curandero to release empacho from, you know, and I've seen it
Wow.
Been done. So
the release gazpacho.
Not gazpacho, empacho.
It actually, it's so funny you said that, because I actually was about to say it kind of sounded like malojo to me, like in a sense. Well, I don't know.
It's all spiritualistic takes, but mm-hmm. from different cultures, you know?
Sure.
So this experience with the yogi would leave a long-lasting impact on May, giving birth to her lifelong spiritual beliefs. May was not particularly religious and as such had an interest in spirituality. Like many of us, she constantly questioned and was fascinated to know if there was more. Her beliefs would become solidified when she was in her 30s. Her good friend, some woman named Amelia Earhart, you know.
Who?
Oh, I thought you were serious.
I know. That's acting. Acting 101. Yes. I almost said amen.
Amelia invited May to participate in her first seance.
Cool.
At that time, May was vacationing and offered to have the seance at the place she was renting. This would be the incident that made her a full-fledged believer. During this seance, she claimed to receive a message from her deceased father about the man she was dating at the time. During that session, there was one event that surprised everyone. The father kind of told her, don't marry this guy, blah, blah, blah. You know?
Oh, wow.
A message came through that no one understood, but that someone recognized as Yiddish, being that what the guest who recognized it was raised Jewish. This message came from the mother of the man she was dating. In the message, May was told to ignore her father and do what her heart told her.
Whoa.
She agreed, married, and had a loving life with her husband. So it wasn't, spirit wasn't wrong.
That's wild. So the dad, what was his reasoning then?
Well, he was dead. We don't know.
Well, but he had to have a reason. He knew something. The dad was supposed to know shit.
Yeah. Well, I guess nothing happened. I mean, she didn't. It wasn't her only husband, but, you know, she had a good life with him.
Okay.
So not long after this session, May started to read up on psychic research and learn to meditate in order to develop her own abilities.
Wow.
She would meet with different spiritual mentors for advice to help strengthen her abilities. Despite this, she began to feel unfulfilled. And in 1941, she took off 6 months from her career to do a deep dive into spiritualism, saying about it, quote, the best is knowing the powers within you, unquote.
Cool.
Of the spirits, May would call them forces and would call upon them to help her through everyday life. For example, she would call upon the spirits when writing a screenplay, only to be able to very shortly after produce a product and a stream of consciousness.
That is so cheating. I want to just do a seance and have my books written for me.
Well, if you're a believer, maybe you could get away with that.
Interesting.
During this time, she would also go through training in order to contact spirits herself. Her spiritual advisor in this stated he believed that May truly had a gift. After several weeks of training, May stated that the spirits came to her in full form, recalling, quote, there were a lot of them, unquote. May did not know who the spirits were as she was attempting to make contact with her mother. After a few weeks of this and not being able to contact her mother, she decided not to continue trying to contact spirits, but at the same time was satisfied knowing that she was able to. For May, this experience was rather intense, and although not directly contacting spirits, she would still call upon them as needed and, of course, throw a good old seance for her friends, you know.
Fun.
Aside from talking to spirits, May was also very into astrology, hence my drink.
Oh, yeah. Nice tie-in.
Yep. So much so that she would claim that her sign explained her personality. You see, she was a Leo, which she said predetermined that she would be, quote, strong like a lioness and at the same time totally feminine, unquote. May would even...
Almost blew a booger.
Ew.
I can feel it. Go back up.
May would even at times use astrology charts to help make life decisions. What? Have you done that? No.
That's my skeptic side is like, oh God, this is a terrible idea.
May also believe fiercely in the power of positive thinking, something she would carry with her throughout her life.
Now that I can get behind.
No, but it was like to the ultimate level.
Yay.
It was her belief that if she thought and felt positive, she would be able to better understand herself and would allow her to accomplish things she thought impossible.
Oh, before. I love that.
She would often advise the most important thing to possess is self-confidence.
Oh, good for you, May.
I love that. Yeah,
I love that.
She was. This was often reflected in the way she portrayed herself on stage, screen, and in her personal life. Considering the time period, May's beliefs seemed outlandish, and people were not always open to them. But despite that, she kept her head held high, not caring what others thought. An attitude she would also carry on to other aspects of her life. You see, May was very well known for not only being a sex symbol, but as well as for her sexual independence, her double entendres, and of course, her sometimes controversial performances, some that landed her in jail. She didn't let things like that dismay her, though. In fact, you could say the controversy kind of fueled her. You know,
I bet. Yeah, I bet she loved it.
Yeah, May would be forever known as a Hollywood starlet and sex symbol. Even now, almost 42 years after her death, she is still lauded and renowned as a trailblazer in not just her career, but in her spiritual beliefs as well. And there you have some insight to a part of Mae West's life that many are unfamiliar with.
Wow. Oh my God, I love Mae.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's so cool. Okay, I have to do a retraction because I know I said that sounds like a terrible idea. I do know people. I actually have friends who are witches or Wiccan or pagan, and some of them are really into astrology. And they do tend to make decisions based on their signs and stuff.
But
and you know what? For them, it really works.
Tarot, same thing.
Yeah, tarot, same thing. So if that works for you,
daily reads, you know?
Yeah, and they really base their decisions off of that. Yeah. And so for anyone, if y'all believe in that and it works for you, good for you.
Just
you know?
Like asking for a sign.
Yeah.
That's just same kind of...
That is true.
If you put it again, I always say this, and it is one of my strongest beliefs that, you know, you put it out into the universe,
yeah.
You are manufacturing that, you know, manifesting.
You're manifesting it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think the one problem I have, which I think maybe is fair, is when people start blaming their issues on their sign, you know, instead of maybe taking responsibility. It's like, oh, well, I blow up and I have this anger, these anger issues
because I'm a fiery
Leo or whatever. And that's a case where it's like, you know,
you're just
like
an asshole.
Yeah, like you're justifying bad behavior.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You're just an asshole. What sign is that?
It's a donut.
It's in the sky. You see like this little anus. It's me. All right. So for number two. I'm going to be talking about...
I'm going to adopt you, the anus
yeah,
star.
The anus constellation.
Oh, hi. If you're looking for another spooky and funny podcast to add to your rotation, check out Anything Bones, now part of the Podmoth Network.
Hey, Boneheads, I'm Sophie Schwartz.
And I'm Caitlin Hart.
And we are the hosts of Anything Bones, the podcast where we talk about bones and bone-related topics.
Sophie? What are bone-related topics?
Thank you for asking, Caitlin. This can be anything from mausoleums to murderers, famous skeletons to cadaver dogs.
Bone churches, mummies, serial killers. You'll hear about them all.
And sometimes we have guests stop by and tell us their favorite bony tales.
Check out Anything Bones on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever your little heart desires.
We release new episodes every Saturday.
Bone Voyage.
Oh, boy. All right. So this is actually, this is kind of a, it kind of, I don't want to say builds off of yours, but it's, but I'm talking about Gross Point is my next story.
Speaking of gross. Related to, I'm still thinking of the asshole constellation. No wonder it's called a chocolate starfish.
Wait,
you never heard that?
Yes.
But I know, but it's a star.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's a starfish. Because a starfish is like a little ball.
I know. Gross.
This is it.
We apologize.
This is it. Okay, Gross Point.
Welcome to us.
So, y'all, okay. I did this story. I found it and I was drawn because one of my favorite movies of all time is Gross Point Blank. And it takes place in a really rich area of Detroit called Gross Point.
I've never seen it.
You haven't? Oh my God, love it. John Cusack. Well, this story takes place in Gross Point. So I'm like, I've got to do it. And this is someone's account. And it is, the person claims that this is true. They swear this really, really happens. And so without further ado, I'm going to tell you this person's account. So they say, it's hard to believe that it's been over 50 years since that night in Gross Point, Michigan, that so changed my life. In the 1940s, I was a young college student just out of the Army studying psychology under the GI Bill at an adult college in Detroit, Michigan. I had mastered the art of hypnotism and, in fact, was considered one of the leading men in the field, which is interesting. Working part-time in an Abbott's magic store and putting on magic shows was a form of income That was not only fun, but allowed me to meet a wide range of personalities, which I think is, I would love to have done that. What a fun life.
Are you sure Yuri Geller didn't write this post?
Who's that?
Remember the Spoonbender illusionist?
Oh!
Because he said he was very well known in the field.
He's like, it's me! But this person is a skeptic, though. So that's what's cool. So one person who, at his request, will remain nameless, was a magician of note and a close personal friend. We had fun trying out new magic tricks and routines on each other.
John Wayne Gacy.
We were very close.
Oh, wait. He's a clown.
I was about to say.
Not a magician. He's a clown.
You're obsessed with him. You want to have John Wayne babies.
No, I just saw that Netflix is releasing a special on him on Friday. So I just saw the trailer a little while ago. Well, that's why he's on the brain.
Even just like last week, you sent me a random message of a clown. Remember that?
I don't remember.
Oh, and I was like, oh, it's John Wayne being known.
Oh, and it was about a clown. So you were the one that brought it up last
week. But your subconscious obsession found it. So anyway, because of our knowledge of these so-called black arts, this is again from the person's point of view, mm-hmm. we were aware of all the tricks used by magicians and mediums to apply their art of the unknowing.
Yeah.
Two-way transmitters to feed information, astral projection units, and of course, table-raising gimmicks, which I, in my research for some of my stuff, found that that was a huge thing at seances were tables moving.
Yeah, whenever anybody had an erection, you know, it would just hit the bottom
of
the table.
That was the mystery they couldn't figure out. But they said that that was such a huge thing during those. Now, and this is in the 1940s, so it would have been, you know, pretty close to the time. And he said the two of us, noticing the rise of fake mediums in the area, decided it would be fun if we did spook debunking. That is to say,
I mean, what else do rich people do when they're bored is create fake shit, you know, like
spend money on,
like the Kardashians. Didn't she just recently see a medium or a seance or something?
I'm sure she did. Sure. And she probably,
nothing better to do. Anyways,
that'd be nice. But
eat the rich.
Noticing, oh boy, the rise of fake mediums. They went debunking. That is to say, we would attend seances and expose their fakery to the members present. It was a riot. We slipped into homes at the request of a person's mate that felt their partner was being taken for a ride. Then one day after a magic show at the old Schubert Theater in downtown Detroit, I was approached by a very nice elderly lady.
I just picture like these people, like burglars, like slipping through the bathroom window, sneaking into the... Well, he said sneaking into the...
Sneaking in and like climbing under the table and being like, there's your boner. Like, there it is. Debunked. So he said that I was approached by a very nice elderly lady who asked if we would put on a show for a few of her friends at her home in Swank Grosse Pointe, a wealthy suburb of Detroit. She said that we could use any gimmicks or tricks we wanted, and she would pay us $100, which in the 40s, that was a lot of money.
Yeah, for us here in Arizona, I'm thinking of this like taking place in Paradise Valley
or
North Scottsdale, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly what it would be like. Yep. So I asked my partner, and he said, sure, let's go for it. We rounded up as much paraphernalia as we could from the magic store and planned a really scary show for them. Our plan included getting as much information as the lady could gather about the persons who would be in attendance, so they have information to foretell and all that stuff. Finally, the night arrived. We had agreed that my partner would handle the mechanical and voice parts in the kitchen, where he'd connect microphones, recorders, set up a projector, and I would take the part of the medium at the dining table with the guests. Mm-hmm. When the guests arrived, I was introduced as Sregna the Gifted, which is says my last name spelled backwards, and we all took our places at the table. The table had been previously rigged to admit a hanging cloud of magic smoke that would hover over the table for several minutes. This cloud...
A fart cloud.
A cloud of gas.
Methane cloud.
I was thinking more weed, but that works too.
It is 420 today.
It is 420 today.
We're recording. This will come out next month, but today is 420 as we speak.
Happy 420.
Yeah.
So this cloud, this fart cloud, was used as a sort of projection screen to receive images of light from the projector controlled by my partner, in short, a sort of astral vision effect. So we all joined hands, and I began my mumbo jumbo. Mm-hmm. I could feel a slight tremble in the hand I was holding, so I know it's working. That's just what I needed. I became quite confident. I called upon the spirits to come forth and make themselves known. Mm-hmm. A few eerie sounds preceded a voice saying that he was the departed husband of one of the guests. A mist formed as planned over the table, and a likeness of the person was seen. There were a few shudders and oohs and ahs. She asked her husband questions, and he answered, very well, I thought, considering the information we were given. This scene was repeated for several of the ladies, with each given oddly specific information.
So they all
It was an eerie success, he said. When the seance came to a close, the ladies left, each with their memories. They had had quite a show. The lady that hired us wrote me a check and thanked me for a wonderful evening. I then went into the kitchen to help my partner disconnect his equipment and pack up. When I reached the kitchen, I was unable to find my partner or his equipment.
What?
Then I heard pounding.
This took a turn?
Then I heard a pounding on the kitchen door.
I'm sure he did.
It was my partner.
pounding
the door. He said when he tried to get in, someone had locked the door already and he was never able to make his way in.
You're fucking kidding me.
He said he was really sorry and asked him what he missed. And then he said to conclude, I may never know what really happened that night. But I can assure you, I have not played with the supernatural since.
That blows my mind because that took a fucking turn I was not expecting.
And this guy, you know, writing that now, he's old. And so, I don't know. I feel like people in the 40s were more honest.
Yeah. And there's two things I was going to say about this. One, if you haven't watched Los Spookies on HBO Max, you have to watch it. I will show you an episode before you leave tonight, at least one. It's only half an hour. But
Los Spookies.
It's a Spanglish comedy show of these four like mid-20 kids, goth kids, one of them's goth, that people start hiring them to be in, like, make up scary situations to scare people, like scare them out of the house or scare them out of a fortune or things like that. It's
That's really cool. Said
this reminded of you.
420 kids.
Oh.
420. It keeps finding its way.
And the second thing I was going to say, like, I feel bad that he was swindling these old ladies, but at the same time, it gave them comfort. And I will talk about that in my Believer.
Okay. Well, and just remember, though, that the lady that hired them knew that this was just a show.
Yeah.
You know, and they did it to make them all feel better. But yeah, take from that. I guess you can be mad. Like, some people might be like, it's still dishonest, but
it is. But, you know, it was for entertainment purposes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So, entertain us now, Chris.
For my second story, I decided to go with a specific case like you did on yours. Mm-hmm. First, because it's kind of batshit. And secondly, because it involves a very famous psychic that most of us have at least heard of. I'm talking about Sylvia Brown and the case of the haunted Toys R Us of Sunnyvale, California.
Really? Yeah. Oh, yay. Toys R Us. Okay.
Remember Sylvia Brown? She's come out on like Mari Povich and like all these talk shows.
Uh-uh.
She was on TV a lot. That's how I remember
this her. Is appropriate because Toys R Us is dead.
Yeah.
So it's like, I am Toys R Us.
So if you have not heard about Sylvia Brown, I will give you some quick information.
Yay.
Sylvia was born October 19th, 1936 in Kansas City, Missouri. She was raised as a Catholic, but her mother was Episcopalian, her grandmother Lutheran, and her father Jewish.
Wow.
So to say she had various perspectives surrounding religion growing up would be an understatement. At the age of 5, Sylvia stated she started seeing visions. Her grandmother had also claimed to be a medium and would help Sylvia to understand exactly what those visions meant. Although she had mediumship in her blood and had vision, she didn't start to give psychic readings until she was in her 40s. Almost 10 years after she began her readings, she would found the Society of Novus Spiritus, a Gnostic Christian church.
And she was in her 40s when she did this?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know what that Gnostic Christianity was either, and it's hard to describe in simple terms, so I urge you to look that up.
Agnostic Christianity?
No, Gnostic.
Gnostic Christianity. Oh, like multiple God Christianity?
Or like at the same level of God, kind of.
Oh, okay.
What I understood.
Huh.
But look it up because we're describing it shittily. Is that a word?
It is shittily, now. Yes, it is.
Sylvia created a large corporation with which she made several TV appearances and wrote 40-ish books all about her mediumship experiences. In her many appearances and books, Sylvia has claimed to have had observed heaven and angels, as well as claiming she had the ability to speak with a specific spirit called Francine.
Huh.
Despite her claims, many claim that Sylvia was a fraud, and in the 1980s, her enterprise and their finances were investigated in regards to fraud. In the end of that case, her and her husband were indicted on grand larceny, serving 1 year of probation and 200 years of community service.
200 years?
Or 200 hours. She's a vampire.
That's a lot of service.
Oh, wow. Sylvia sadly passed on from a heart attack in 2013 at her home in California.
Mm.
Believer or skeptic, you cannot deny the impact that Sylvia has left on the world, which brings me to the second part of my story.
Toys R Us?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Toys R Us in Sunnyvale, California. So before Toys R Us, the land, which in the 1800s was once a plantation and belonged to a Martin Murphy. On this land, Martin had a preacher working for him called Johnny Johnson, sometimes nicknamed and called Crazy Johnny. Apparently, Johnny had suffered from encephalitis.
Terrible.
Yeah. And also had a thing for Martin's daughter, Elizabeth. Johnny had learned that Elizabeth was planning to leave town and get married to a lawyer, which, as you probably guessed, didn't sit well with him. Later that day, anger in tow, he was out completing some chores while chopping wood, he missed and hit himself, resulting in him bleeding out and dying before he would be found.
Oh my God. How brutal. How bad do you have to miss to like do that?
Yeah. I know. It's insane.
Oh, that's wild.
Since that time, it has been said that that Johnny hunts the land searching for his lost love. Fast forward to 1970 when the infamous toy store would be built on the land. Yes, it was built in 1970, but no investigations would take place until 8 years later. Some of the issues that were witnessed in the store included cold spots, toys jumping off shelves, names being heard, the fresh smell of flowers. In one particular incident, a worker was alone there one night when he heard a closed and locked door, only to hear someone banging on the other side.
Ooh!
Of course, he opened the door only to find that no one was there. It would happen multiple times before he decided to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. But it is weird to think about, like, toys jumped off the shelf, and it's like, well, isn't that what toys kind of do?
But
this leapfrog leaped off the shelf.
Across the...
Yeah.
So another creepy incident happened when a mysterious voice was heard on a closing night over the PA system saying, "The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away."
Oh, shisa.
I would freak out.
Yeah, that's scary.
Occasionally a ghost could be seen who was described as a man in his 20s dressed in old-fashioned clothes. The media caught wind of these incidents, as did old one Miss Sylvia Brown.
Mm.
She had heard that aisle 15C was home to a lot of incidents and decided to perform a seance in that spot.
No, okay.
This seance would...
She has like Furbies lined up around the table.
This seance would actually appear on the television show That's Incredible. So if you want to see it, you can watch it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
On the night of the seance, Sylvia had with her employees of the store, a camera crew, and photographers. She requested that the lights be turned off except for the one above them. Once everyone was seated, she began to attempt to contact the spirit. During the session... Excuse me.
Ooh, seance.
During the session, Sylvia described seeing a tall, lanky man in his early 30s, which would eventually be assumed to be Johnny Johnson. Sylvia claimed the spirit had stated he had been a preacher and a ranch hand in the 1800s. She communicated with him sometime and tried to get him to cross over to the other side, but he refused, as he still waited for his Elizabeth to return.
Wow.
Of all the pictures taken that night, one in particular would stand out, and you can find this online. The film from the infrared camera produced a photo of a man standing not 2 feet away from one employee, leaning against a shelf, hands folded, appearing to be tall, young, and lanky.
Holy shit.
Following this seance session, Sylvia would periodically still return to the store and speak with the spirit, which she detailed in some of her books. She made a sort of friendship with this ghost.
Huh.
She said that she still attempted to get him to cross over, but the ghost was resistant and got annoyed, telling her, quote, "If you tell me I'm dead one more time, I'm not going to talk to you anymore," unquote. So after that time, they chatted about other things. After the incident, the Toys R Us apparently had a boom in business, but sadly, as you know, all Toys R Us shuttered a few years ago, including the one in Sunnyvale where today an REI sporting goods store now resides. Future employees of the store made minimal claims of other occurrences, some even stating they didn't know about the story. So, was this a mere publicity stunt to drum up business, or is what Sylvia Brown claims true? And what about the photo of the man? Is that the heartbroken preacher from so many years ago? Well, folks, we just may never know.
Wow. Wait, so you said that at REI, does anything happen there?
I haven't seen anything from that. Everything was about this freaking Toys R Us.
Wow, that's wild. What a great story. Oh, yeah. My God, I love that. That's
when
the best.
When I found that, I was like, yes, I'm sold.
That is so good. Wow. Oh, these stories are amazing. Okay, good episode. All right, so my next story is one that I actually found on Reddit.
Oh, yeah.
So this is like a Reddit story. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Third story. This is a two-parter.
Okay.
And so because they're both shorter, like two stories from Reddit.
Okay.
And both of these, again, basically claim that this did happen, you know. And if you've noticed, the ones that I pick, if I find like accounts, they're ones that are not so crazy where they're just unbelievable. Yeah. Like they're ones that
you can just completely shit on and be like, meh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These are not meh. These are like, oh, okay. So this person says, while stationed in Germany in the early 2000s, me and a group of friends decided to hold a seance in our military dorm room. Only four of us actually participated while a couple more people drank and watched. After a couple of minutes of us joking around, we started asking more serious questions. We eventually got in contact with a teen girl who told us she was looking for her boyfriend. Oh, yeah. She said that they were driving back from a Grateful Dead concert when they crashed their car and died, and she hasn't seen him since. Mm-hmm. Now, the road that they crashed on was one we knew well. It connected two Air Force bases and was pretty curvy and dangerous, and a lot of people had crashed and died driving it.
Wow.
After a couple of minutes, right?
Is that one of those like suicide bend or whatever they call it?
Yes, yeah. It's exactly what it would be like. After a couple of minutes of small talk, she told us she had to leave, but asked if we could please find her boyfriend for her, and she gave us his name. Mm-hmm. We eventually were able to make contact with him, and we asked him if he knew Cheryl, the girl's name, mm-hmm. and he said yes. She was his true love, and he regretted not being able to be with her, and he missed her very much. He told us to tell her that he'd always love her and that he was sorry. When we asked him what he was sorry about, he just spelled out random letters until he eventually stopped communicating with us. Mm. After around 10 minutes of unsuccessfully trying to get in touch with Cheryl.
Spectral Wordle.
Yeah. And they're all like trying to jumble it. And they're like, I'm so bad at this. But after 10 minutes of unsuccessfully trying to get in touch with Cheryl and her boyfriend again, we finally got in contact with an older woman. She seemed really sweet and nice, and she said that she knew Cheryl. When we asked her why she was unable to find her boyfriend, she said it was because Cheryl was in heaven and her boyfriend was in hell.
Oh, fuck.
In that moment, the candles in the room burst out.
Nope.
Needless to say, everyone got pretty freaked out and decided to stop the seance, and we never talked about it after that night. It's been over 10 years. And it still freaks me out thinking about that night.
That's the prime prime example is why you don't fuck with spirits, because like shit like that can happen. Yep. Or you can become possessed maybe. But even something small like that, no, absolutely not.
I found that so creepy. Like, can you imagine just being like, why can't you find your boyfriend? And you just feel like, oh, they just haven't connected in the afterlife. And it's like, oh no, he's in hell.
Well, not only that, but you may find out like, if you're a true believer, you're going to sit with this information that may not be true, and just like it may hurt you more.
True.
You know?
That's true. That's true. That's very true.
Just be wary.
Be wary. Yep. So story number two, I just called Die. This person says, I messed around with the Ouija. So, and this is like kind of, I guess, a mix between Ouija and seance, mm-hmm. in pairs and solo for a period of about 2 years. I experienced a lot of strange shit. Now my craziest story, swear it's true, 1997. One day I challenged the board and said, give me something independent to verify all the information you are giving me. Predict a news event. Tell me something that is going to happen. It starts moving strange, like it's having a hard time telling me something. Mm-hmm. Paraphrasing here, since it was a long time ago, but the exchange went something like this. Die, 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 die. I'm like, whoa, something nasty here telling me to die. But then it says, Princess, die, die, die.
So it was Princess Diana?
So Princess Di at the time was young and vital. So of course I'm skeptical.
Oh, of course.
Like, oh yeah, sure she dies. How? The thing spells out car accident.
No.
Yeah, way. Right. Like a princess could get killed in a car accident. Where is this car accident? Paris.
What?
Yeah, right. What the hell is the Princess of Wales doing in Paris? Okay, when is this going to happen? Ohio. I had a trip planned to Ohio in the coming weeks. So sure, whatever, Princess Di will die in a car crash in Paris while I'm in Ohio. Okay. I go to Ohio. Nothing happens. I forgot about it. Just one of those weird sessions, you know, that just happens every once in a while.
What?
Later, I'm in Ohio again. I come out into the living room and everyone is watching the TV glued to a news report. What? I ask. You know what? Princess Di killed in an accident in Paris.
In a car accident.
Yep. I was stunned. Don't mess with the Ouija board, kids. I don't know what's going on there, but it isn't good.
That is fucking creepy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, those are some good stories. So.
I like them. Okay, so.
Well, since I don't have a third story because mine were pretty long. So I will start with Believer.
Yeah, so okay. So now those are our stories. I hope y'all enjoyed them. Those were awesome. That was good stories.
All of them were good, yeah.
So now we go to our believer skeptic portion, and some of them, I'm not sure if Chris will really believe or not, because there's some stuff we've talked about that's so weird that even
like a spiritual person,
I mean, it's, some of them are hard. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a couple, but there's a couple where it's like, for this one, I assume that you believed in this.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what you're going to say.
Yeah. So, seances, do I believe in them? I don't know if I believe specifically in the act of a seance.
Oh, interesting.
But I definitely believe we can communicate with the dead.
Okay. Oh, sure. I thought you would.
Yeah. In my research, I read an article from Forbes, mind you.
Forbes? Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, it's legit, you know. Anyhow, in it, they conducted a study on mediums and non-mediums, and it provided some very interesting results. The article stated that of the people they surveyed, they found that spiritualist mediums are more prone to immersive mental activities, think lucid dreaming or other altered states of consciousness.
Interesting.
And frequently have unusual auditory experiences, especially earlier in life.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. One researcher states that, quote, all of these experiences may result more from having certain tendencies or early abilities than from simply believing in the possibility of contacting the dead if one tries hard enough, unquote. That being said, another researcher says that sensing the dead may actually be a response to grief, supported by the fact that between 30 and 60% elderly widowed people experience sort of a bereavement hallucination. Although experts state the experience is helpful to the bereaved as it, quote, can provide emotional strength and comfort, reduce feelings of isolation, and give people encouragement during difficult tasks, unquote. Despite all this research, it is hard to know why people hear the dead, since there really is no way to anticipate when such an event might occur. Of the study, the co-author says that being able to understand how such communications develop is important in helping us understand more about distressing or non-controllable experiences when hearing voices in a negative fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For those non-believers, a previous non-believer makes a good point, saying, quote, you live your whole life thinking that some things just aren't real. But when one of them is personally proven to you, you realize you know much less than you thought you did, unquote. So, yes, I believe we can communicate with the dead. But how and why this happens, this is a whole different question. On that, I may not, and on that, on one that I may never have the answers to, at least not in my lifetime, perhaps in the next.
Oh, whenever I conjure you, and then you see a blue flame of hair, like dancing. It's like, it's definitely Chris. All right. So on to debunk. Okay. So first I'm going to talk a little bit about Helen Duncan.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go into kind of seances as a whole. So y'all did some research on Helen Duncan. As it turned out, Duncan herself didn't have just that one son in the armed forces. She had three sons.
Oh.
Three sons all serving in the armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
So, from my research, the heads of the armed forces actually didn't think she had powers and were going to betray them with her powers.
Mm-hmm.
They thought she was getting information for her sons.
Okay.
And just blabbing about it.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, because her sons, and I don't know how high up they were or what they were privy to, but they were in there.
Why didn't they get in trouble?
Oh, okay. So I said, oddly, I didn't actually read anything about punishment for the sons.
Yeah.
Because if they're spilling secrets, that's bad. But from everything I saw, it's like she was the only one being punished for this. So either it means I'm a terrible researcher or... fuck the patriarchy.
Oh.
I thought you were going to say that.
Oh, they made it up. I didn't even think about that. They're saying that she did it, and it really didn't happen.
Well, like, say her sons told her.
Yeah.
and she's the one that gets punished for it, not yeah. them, then it's obviously, to me, misogyny, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's them. They shouldn't be the ones telling. But anyway, for seances as a whole...
As I like to quote my favorite murder, misogyny uh-huh. ruins the party again.
Again, it does.
Or is it
toxic masculinity?
Toxic, there it is.
What did you say?
It's a misogyny. But misogyny. It works.
That totally works.
Their,
never mind.
Their quote is, toxic masculinity ruins the party
agreed.
Again.
Agreed. Now, for seances as a whole, I found an interesting article called Science of the Seance, Why Speaking to Spirits is Talking to Yourself. It's really long, but it has some info that's pretty cool. So if you want to go read more, feel free. But here it says in the mid-19th century, the growing spiritualist movement had begun to experiment with ghostly messages transcribed by table turning. In table turning, the alphabet was inscribed on a table upon which all the participants laid their hands.
So it's like a giant Ouija board.
It actually said in an article that it was like a precursor to the Ouija board.
It's that's why it's called a speaking board.
Oh, okay. So seemingly ethereal whisperings would soon appear from the void as the table tilted towards the imprinted letters. Yeah. Such demonstrations of spiritualism convinced many in high society that a new force, perhaps a mystical one, was behind the haunting messages.
Yeah, you know, I'd rather you be involved in seances than, say, spend some money on going to space or buying Twitter, you know, shit like that.
Right. I'm trying to see what you're for and against there.
Again.
Who you're making fun
again,
of.
Again, eat the rich.
Eat the rich. Okay.
Yet not everyone was so easily convinced. Michael Faraday, the prominent British scientist, was incredibly dubious on the claims of the spiritualist. To test the phenomenon, he set about eliminating variables and alternative explanations, which is so cool. Using wood and rubber to increase resistance to...
Increase.
I was like, mowage. Wob. Two wob. Increase. Resistance to movement. You know, so now you're making it harder for that table to move.
Yeah.
He suddenly observed no effect on the table's motion. His efforts showed that no special force was at play, and his continued investigations led him to conclude that far from being some bizarre supernatural event, table tipping was nothing more than involuntary muscular actions. Faraday's careful experiments had revealed that there was no mysterious force, just a propensity for men and women to delude themselves, which I think is really cool. So he's not even saying, like, in a lot of these cases, it's people being fraud and messing with you. It's like, and I talked about this in a previous debunk, but it's like you're so heightened and your muscles and everything are so on edge that you will actually do involuntary motions without even realizing it that will support what you want to see on the table. It's really fascinating. So you need to read about that. This conclusion was supported by the meticulous parallel experiments of French chemist Michel-Eugène Chevreul. That was pretty good. In his 1854 paper on the subject, he turned his attention to table turning, divining rods, and magic pendulums, demonstrating how involuntary and subconscious muscle reactions are the cause of ostensibly magic movements. Now, more than this, Chevreul discovered that once the person holding the rod was made aware of this reaction, the movements ceased and could not be reproduced. Isn't that wild? So whenever someone says, actually, I can see that this is your muscles, and you're not even realizing that it's happening, but that is what's going on, suddenly these people are like, oh, they stop doing it, and the reaction stopped. No ghosts, Chris!
Interesting.
Yeah.
I find... I was really a believer in Miss Duncan here, and you brought all this stuff.
Hey, you know, but there are people that believe in you still can, because were her, like, the fact that
we don't know that she got this information from her son, so she could have had a true gift.
She very well could have, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that that's what I loved about that story, is there's kind of enough evidence both ways where, even after discussing all of that, mm-hmm. you could still believe in this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So,
all right. So,
with
we're
that,
Crypt for Week. I'm doing a quick time check on the
camera check.
Making sure. All right. Yeah, let's go.
All right. So, in our final segment of the show, we go through what is called Creep of the Week. Like I said, with that, we'll share some weird story or, you know, current event that is related to our topic. So this one's fun, and Oh, I'll get to it.
it made you spasm. It was so fun.
Well, for this group of the week, I don't have like a weird story, but instead it's a little more informational, if you will.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of Lilydale in New York, in upstate?
Lilydale?
Yeah.
I have not.
Lilydale is a hamlet in New York. I don't know of what the bigger city is called. And how I have never heard of this place before is fucking beyond me, and as you'll see. Lilydale is an international member organization and residential community with people who practice spiritualism.
Really? Oh, cool.
Has been in practice since the late 1800s.
Oh, that's really neat. Is this like Manhattan, or is this like remote?
Upstate.
Oh, upstate. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Once the spiritualism movement and organization began to decline, Lilydale became like a sort of mecca for all things spiritual and is now the largest center for spiritualism.
That's amazing.
It is a small community, like I said, in upstate New York, with 160 private residences. Year-round, they offer things such as mediumship demonstrations, religious services, workshops, thought exchange meetings, and healing services. And I actually looked up on their website today, and they're showing houses that are for sale there. So if you want to become a member, it tells you how you can and what you...
So you can't buy a house unless you are a spiritualist then?
Yeah. There's specific things that you have to meet in order to be a member of their... What would you call it? Their society. Yeah.
Cool.
So...
Cult.
Yeah. So next time you have any spiritualist needs or are just curious and happen to be in upstate New York, be sure to stop in Lilydale.
That is so cool. Yeah. Wow, awesome.
So with that, guys, thank you so much for bearing with us today. This has been such a fun episode. A lot more interesting than I had anticipated, but...
fascinating. My favorite episodes are the ones where you go into it maybe with some knowledge or an expectation of what you're going to hear. Yeah. And then the stories, though, are just so weird and mind-blowing that you're kind of, it challenges what you believe. And that's what I like.
Yeah. And again, we're doing this for the Arizona Theater Matters Festival.
Yep.
Again, thank you for having us here and allowing us to do this. As you heard in if you're new to us, but if you're listening to this audio, this is going to be our last episode for a while. Cody's going on out of state and being traveling for the next few months. And I am still waiting to hear on something very special that I applied for. I'm not talking about it because I don't want to jinx it. But,
good thoughts.
Yeah, if that happens, then that means this will have to be whittled down a little bit, but we will talk about that once Cody's back from vacation.
Yeah, exactly. But
in the meantime, you can also follow us and find us bspodphx.com, where you can find all our episodes, all our show notes, descriptors, all of the fun stuff on there.
You can. And just search BSP or Believer Skeptic Podcast on your whatever podcast listener you listen to.
And you'll find it.
If you listen to us and you're like, oh, they're stopping for a little bit and you're new, don't worry. We've been doing this for almost 5 years. So there are over 100 episodes in the interim week. So we do a full episode every other week. In the interim week, we do what's called a mini-sode, which is just one story a piece that teases the upcoming topic. And it's kind of a game. Like, you listen to the mini-sode, listen to the hints, and see if you can guess what the next topic is going to be.
Yeah.
And so there are almost 100 minisodes. There is a lot of content out there if you're interested.
Yeah. And like I said, there's a lot of other paranormal podcasts that we love and enjoy. So if you want any recommendations, I can always give you those as well to hold you over. But
yeah.
Again, you can find us on our website. You can follow us on social media. Our handle's at BSPodPHX. And you can email us with your own. Yeah, if you have seance or mediumship experiences, please send those to us, bspodphx@gmail.com.
Yeah, because as things settle down, you know, when we come back together, you know, we'd love to share some stories.
Absolutely. We could do a whole a listener episode if we got enough stories.
Yeah, exactly. And so then on a slightly different note, I am actually an LGBT author.
Yes.
So if you are a reader and you like young adult urban fantasy books, I have a trilogy out called The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren. You can just search for my name, Cody Wagner, or the book name on Amazon. It's the first thing that comes up. Give that a look-see if you're into that kind of thing. And Do what?
I just had one more thing.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
Since you are promoting yourself, I want to do a little self-promotion too.
Do it.
Especially since this is the live episode will be seen by a lot of theater people. I am a director in the Valley, actor as well, but more so a director now.
And singer.
And singer, yeah. But just look out for my work. I work all over the Valley. The one thing that I can announce right now is next March, March 2023, I will be directing Angels in America, Millennium Approaches. So the first part at Fountain Hills Theater. So be on the lookout for me. There's got a lot of other fun things that I can't mention right now coming up.
Very, very cool. Very yeah. True, too. Yeah.
Okay, so we have 10-ish minutes left.
Okay.
Okay. So is that something... I thought what we may do for this is talk a little bit about either some of our favorite episodes or maybe like if you're in... Just if for people who haven't listened to us, like if you're into religion, maybe here are a few episodes that you might, you know, be interested in. Or if you like the paranormal or if you like even... We've even done a little bit of true crime because I know Chris really likes it.
Yeah.
So... You might be interested in that.
And you'd like to know, the reason, the kind of the inspiration for our podcast was my favorite murder and at the time they were called Bizarre States. One's a paranormal, one's true crime, and that's what inspired me to want to do a podcast and hound him to finally reel him into doing it.
Yeah, and so because I'd never listened to a podcast before, and so I was like, But we finally, that's why he wanted true crime or paranormal, and I was like, how do I feel about these? And I wasn't sure, but then the idea of debunking, even though like sharing fun stuff, but then debunking and believing, talking about why people do, that's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
And so that's where the whole thing kind of came together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what do you think? Do you want to do a couple favorites?
Sure.
Or I was trying to think like, you can actually read all the episode names and get a little description to kind of see what they're about, but maybe as a whole, the things that we kind of explore the most, I know like I grew up Catholic.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of religious episodes where we explore things like stigmata. We did one recently, just a few weeks ago, and it was on Eucharistic miracles. And it was something that neither one of us knew so much about.
And turned out way crazier than we had anticipated.
It was crazy. It was like, you know, whenever the priest, you know, consecrates the host, like during Mass, where actual human tissue, because Catholics, you know, believe that it really is the body of Christ, that human tissue was found in the host. You know, things like that, where it was seen as a miracle. So it's really, really crazy. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to just mention some of like our more recent favorite episodes just because I was upon it.
Oh, okay. Yes, I see. This will remind me of something too.
Yeah, is one of my favorite that we recently did here in January was our tribute to Anne Rice as she passed away in December. And she has been a huge influence in my life. One of the artist that has influenced just a lot of what I believe and how I feel about certain things. And just, so we did a whole episode to her based, not necessarily the stories about her, but stories that were inspired by her characters and whatnot. And it was a beautiful episode too.
It was really good. So yeah, we did a little bit of vampire stuff in that. And that's one thing that I like is that, you know, we do some random ass stuff, but then there were also episodes that are more special to us, you know, like the Anne Rice, also some more timely episodes like when Lorraine Warren of the, you know, the Warrens who did The Conjuring and those movies, when she died,
she passed away on a Friday. We did an episode in 2 days on Sunday about her,
talking about her and some of their most famous cases. So it's all trying to be stuff that really gets us motivated.
Yeah. Or like in our first year, after my mom passed, we did that episode on what were they called? What would you call them? Angel.
Oh my God. It was on the tip of my tongue. And now that you said that,
like when they give you signs, you
know? It's like, like pennies from heaven was something that one person called it.
But that was also an episode that a lot of people bring up and find very beautiful just because of the vulnerability that we both had in that episode, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So. And then we also try to do a lot of regional stuff because it's interesting to be like in the Philippines.
Yeah.
What are some of the
the things, some of the lore there that's really interesting. Yeah,
for me, the things I find most interesting is the folklore. Like, I think I was a folklorist in a previous life, and if I were a bit younger and not so much in student debt, I would probably go back to school for folklore.
Oh, that would be so cool. That would be really neat.
Yeah, it was so weird because we did a random-ass episode on, like, Southwestern folklore. And I didn't really know how much to think of it, like, if people are even going to like it. And it turned out to be the number one or two most popular episode.
People really liked our folklore episodes.
Yeah, and so we were like, oh, so then we started just picking regions. Oh, Japanese!
I knew you were going to say that. Yokai?
Oh, okay, y'all. If you want serious, there are some definite more serious, but there are some that are just so fun. And yeah, go listen to the Japanese folklore.
Or one fun one, since, you know, we are doing this as a live stream, is from 2 years ago, right after COVID started. It was our, like, our fuck you COVID tribute episode.
Yeah.
Which was called something about Typhoid Mary.
Yeah.
Because I do a story about Typhoid Mary,
which will
blow your fucking mind.
Oh, it's wild.
Yeah.
It is wild. And, oh, I was about to say something else. Oh, yeah. The Japanese one. Chris shared the story of a yokai, which is like kind of a spirit that tries to pull out a gem from your butthole. And it's so amazing.
Yeah, and all the Japanese ones are crazy. Not crazy. That's the wrong term. But are just, wow. Like,
they're
outlandish.
There are things that, I guess, being in the West that are just so foreign to us.
Yeah.
But because it's like the yokai will literally take the form of anything. So I had a whole story about, what was it, like a broom? Like a yokai that becomes a broom.
Oh, the pillow flipper one. That's the one that I had. It just flips pillows at night. That's what the spirit does.
That's what the spirit does. Yeah. So it was really wild. And so whenever we start exploring around the world, I feel like the cool thing about the podcast is how much I've really learned. Like, there are many times in conversation with people where something will come up and I'll actually know something about it because we talked about something related in a podcast.
Yeah, like random trivia.
Random, yes, exactly. Random trivia.
Speaking
or just stories.
Random, I love when we choose random things and they end up, both of us are like, and then it end up being like an amazing episode.
Yes.
Like I said, we should do an episode on goats. And Cody was very hesitant.
Goat. Not greatest of all time, but
just
animals.
The animals.
Goats. Yeah.
But there's so much supernatural and paranormal and religious related to goats that it just made sense.
It was amazing. That's why there were times whenever, usually we're really in sync about agreeing on a topic, but there were times when one of us will throw a topic out and the other person will be like, really?
Yeah.
But then it turns out to be amazing. And that's, with that said, we have to do a little mention then of our, I think, both of our probably all-time favorite episode because of that. Chris reached out to me one day randomly, and this was 2-3 years ago, and was like, I just heard about this thing called tulpas.
Yep, I knew you were going to bring that up.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know what that is. And he's like, it's like imaginary friends. And I was like, well, that, how are we going to do a whole episode on imaginary friends? But holy shit, y'all, that episode, tulpas, it's insanity.
It's still to this day. Like,
to this day.
Our favorite. It's just
It's
just out of this world. It's hard to even describe what it is because it's, you'll have to listen to that. Well, that's episode 47, but it's basically a manifestation that you create these things from manifesting them, you know?
Yep. And that people, and the number of people that believe in them
or have done it
is astronomical. But we say like that's a favorite, but I also admit that the funny episodes, like we did a Valentine's Day episode.
That was extremely sexual, yes.
It got real dirty and it was real funny. And oh my God. Was that that was the Spectral Love and Denial? Yeah. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Just listen to if you're into dirty, funny shit, listen to go back in the store Valentine episodes.
Yeah, so.
And if you like, and our Christmas episodes are really
all
good.
All the Christmas ones are always good.
Yeah. Super fun. That was where we learned about the poop log.
Yeah. So.
So, okay.
All right. Well, I think that gave you enough to hold you over for a little bit. Again, thank you for all that you do and for listening and for joining us here today. Those are watching live. And again, thank you, Arizona Theater Matters. We appreciate you. And with that,
bye.
again next time.